All right, let's take it national here on The Real Kipper and Bourne Show. Nick Kiprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee. And we are live on Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver, Sportsnet 960 in Calgary. This hour of Real Kipper and Bourne brought to you by Bet365. In a few minutes, we'll welcome in Adam Oates, former NHLer, Hall of Famer, and overall good guy. Love having him on the show. Gets us to see things, much like our buddy Steve Alliquette, in a different way, in a different look. He's got, of course, president of the Oak Sports Group. He works with a lot of top stars around the league, helping them form out their game, making the most out of what he observes.
He sees it in a unique way, which is really nice.
Really nice. We'll probably start with what we witnessed last night between the Stanley Cup champions and the Edmonton Oilers, a game that had a feel like the Oilers were in command, but this Florida team will not go away. You wait for it to go. That's catching up to them, right? All of it. Winning the Stanley Cup last year, losing two of their top six defensemen. Bobrovsky doesn't have quite the same look to start the season, but they still find a way.
Their defining characteristic of the Florida Panthers, and I don't know what you guys would say it is for yourselves. My defining characteristic for Florida is they're mean. They're just a bunch of meanies. They're mean, and they're smart, too. Like, Sam Reinhart, that bank goal, you know, thoughtful.
Loved it.
Yeah, just, like, rips it off Stu Skinner's helmet. You know, they just, in those games, they just have a little bit of an edge. You know, they're just a tough team to play against.
It was, just to touch on Sam Reinhart, and, like, I so missed this. Because I remember him as a top two pick.
I think he's the most wrong I've been on a guy who I saw young.
Oh, no.
I've
got you beat. I thought he was a disaster in Buffalo and a guy that was just going to fade.
He's like Jimmy Vesey. He was like Jimmy Vesey that age where it was like, you know, Keith, you called him vanilla or whatever. But it's like, yeah, he's fine.
That bank goal and how he, like, it was a 200-foot goal, or should I say 150, because he had the perfect stick in his own zone.
On a Draisaitl play to the point, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Perfect stick. So defensively, he is right there. And he goes and he beats a one-on-one 50-50 kind of puck with a very good defenseman, the best defenseman that the Oilers have. Yeah. And then to hold on to the puck, actually cross the goal line.
He had nothing, right?
And you could see his eyes fixated on Skinner's position.
Yeah.
And he put it exactly where he wanted it, off his head.
Well, our usual Tuesday guest, Valley, who couldn't do it today, he would be just so mad about the reverse VH there. Because it's the, where he's down on one knee. Like, he's like, you know, guarding against the wraparound, I guess.
Yeah.
And Reinhart just fires it off his melon into the back of the net. Shot it so hard.
He did. Oh, yeah, that hurt.
Oh, yeah.
If there is one example that goalie coaches could show their students on why you got to kind of bail on this, because
at least let the play develop further before you.
The whole premise of the reverse VH is that I am giving you a 20% chance to hit this area, and if you do, I'll tip my hat to you. But these guys are so good now, and the sticks are so good, and their ability to hit a 15, 20% area now is better than it's ever been in the history of the game.
Yeah, you can't invite guys and say, if you hit this, you get it, because they'll hit it. They will.
Like, I don't even know what the percentage was for Reinhart last
night. Probably 2%.
Five at the most.
Yeah.
And he still can have his eyes up, stare at it, and hit it.
Yeah. The other takeaway, you know, in those sort of games, Ekholm, you mentioned, you know, is their best defenseman or whatever. Bouchard, he is such a talent offensively, and he's been good this year, but he's just going to have some nights like that. And that was one of those nights for him. One of those nights where, again, I don't mean to slag a guy who's a good hockey player, but he just has some nights where it's like, oh, man. You know, not not overly forceful. The big mistakes. The
is that not what cost him Team Canada?
Yeah,
I mean, is definitively what cost him Team Canada. They just you can't risk that one moment.
And I will say though, watching that game, that I watched Zach Hyman play, and I'm like, yeah, maybe could have sent him. You know, like about that, I had the opposite feelings watching those two guys because I'm like Bouchard. I feel very confident in the fact that they didn't take him.
Yeah.
But Hyman, now that he's gotten hot, just the way he skates, just the lanes he opens up, his ability to go to the front of the net, like, I mean, and take one off the melon. Oh, my God, that was horrible. But, like, I just, you watch him play, and you're like, you know, that's a guy you probably could have taken.
I hate that the puck didn't go in from early. Go ahead, Kim.
I was just going to say, I don't have the lineup, Team Canada's lineup, but give me one guy that Hyman should take
Seth Jarvis.
Off. Seth Jarvis
as the 13th? Seth Jarvis is the name, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I
can see that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got me there.
I think that he hadn't been scoring this year, and everyone went, well, then the 57 or 54 he had was a mirage. It was like, well, he's still getting a ton of these chances, and you don't want him to be a scorer anyway. But, yeah, there's the
– See, I think
like Jarvis is
I
bad,
think
but.
With Zach, it really put a ton of pressure on the staff, Team Canada staff, to say – we know he's struggling. We know he's not scoring at the rate.
Yeah.
But we completely trust by the time this tournament arrives, we're going to get the Zach Hyman that's been at the top of his game
for sure
for a long time here. And they couldn't do that.
But I do wonder if he won't play himself into the next man up position here. You know, the thing with Hyman and like last year's goal total, the year before, he didn't score 10. He had 36 the year before. You know, it's... he's established himself as a guy who scores some goals.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll wait and see if they end up picking him, but I think you're right, Kip, that they were in a tough spot because it wasn't going in, but boy, night like last night, he's not afraid of the big moments. He had 16 playoff goals last year.
Yeah.
16 playoff goals.
Yeah.
It's a good season.
Yeah.
Okay, no Adam Oates?
I'm trying to track Oates down.
Okay.
I'm getting in my ear that possibly no video. Is okay. That yeah. Accurate?
Maybe no Oates, boys.
Okay. All right. That's okay. Well, live radio, baby.
We're not lacking for conversation time.
Did you want to talk about what Capo Caco had to say today?
No, I just want to stay a little bit more on the Oiler game for a second here, and just in terms of where you see the goaltending last night, because it is one of those games where I think if you could be highly entertained, I think, again, coaching staffs would find plenty of warts on both sides last night.
Yeah.
But Bobrovsky, to me, had a very...
I thought Bob was bad.
Grant Fuhr, just make one save... Yeah. Better than the guy across for me, and it'll be good enough. And I thought it was appropriate that he made a miraculous save there to preserve the win off of Draisaitl at the end of the game.
He did, but like the Draisaitl one he scores on, I mean, it's pretty ugly, right? Just like the one-timer from the corner there.
Like every goalie gives up that now to Draisaitl.
Like it goes in a lot, you're saying.
It goes in a lot.
It does.
Yeah.
But that shouldn't go in.
I know, but
it
does.
It's a pass.
Yep. Great observation.
He's been at worse angles on other goalies that have gone in. That's the only benefit of the doubt I'll give Bobrovsky. And his numbers aren't great, and he has not looked...
They're terrible.
Hasn't looked great.
I can't think of the name. Another Panther scored from the other side on... another Oiler scored on the other side on Bob earlier in the game. Like he kind of struggled on both ones. Kapanen back, Banks went in kind of behind the net. Like just not a pretty night from Bob. So if you're, you know, a fan of a first hour of our program, Leafs fan, seeing Bob struggle has to be somewhat encouraging.
So Leon Draisaitl has won the Hart in the past. And his last five games, his point totals are 2-2-4-3. He's scoring at will. It seems like he's starting for me to move up my rankings, and maybe we'll do a little bit of it in game time in terms of where he's at when it comes to the odds.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a few guys better to watch in the league than him. It's such a unique game today because, you know, there's such a focus on speed and like these guys that are just all burners and just fly up and down the ice. And he's much more methodical, the passing, the scoring, everything that he does. He's one of the best guys to watch in the league. I'm not breaking news here, but like last night I thought he was brilliant.
Well, and you know, in the Hart Trophy conversation again, he is also, you know, a guy. He's a 1.2 points per game in the regular season, 1.46 points per game in the playoffs. And that's when everyone says we got to shut down McDavid and Draisaitl.
Yeah.
You know, his numbers go up. This guy is just a beast and you can't. That's, I think, it works for him in the postseason because he's a lot of person. He's a big guy.
Not that I'm going to drag our Leaf Hour edition into our national show.
Yes.
But you're going to ask me who
but
I
will.
Have.
Matthews I will. No, I'm Leon? Not. Oh, I'm not. I'm just going to make an observation that I think when I watch Austin Matthews, I think he should aspire to play more like Leon Draisaitl.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of just the ability, the passing ability, is that what it is?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like is
well, he should start using as, a boat as, or
as good as
stick.
As good as Draisaitl is at putting the puck in the net or having this area that he now owns.
Yeah.
Much like Ovechkin has owned the top of the circle or Stamkos or anyone else that has a ownership of a certain area of the ice. That guy is one hell of a good passer. One of the top passers in the world.
Oh, for sure. And, I mean, this guy's another level.
I'm not saying that, you know, Austin has the same vision that he has to move the puck, but that's where I think if you're a top player in the league, a top centerman, mm-hmm. man, he's the perfect role model.
Yeah, but this is a little like being like, you know, Ovechkin should be more like Backstrom. Like, it's like this guy is, he's a 130-point season under his belt. Like, Draisaitl offensively is a do-it-all sort of guy. He is undefendable at times.
Multi-dimensional.
Yeah. There's a YouTube video out there for anyone who's not right now, but I've seen it before. It's called Leon Draisaitl Passes, but they get increasingly more impossible.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about a 10-minute long video. He has one of the most unbelievable passing mixtapes of all time.
And almost all of them on his back end.
Yeah, he's great backhand sauce, good passer, great shooter, anything. You know, it's a big conversation out there with they like to compare him to Matthews and say he's better. So he probably is.
We also have
reasonable suggestion.
Did I say that?
We also have Mike Halford coming up, right?
Yep.
Co-host of Halford and Bruff in Vancouver. And we're going to get into great detail on the Vancouver Canucks as well because there's a lot of stuff going on in Vancouver.
It's weird, man. Like, fans are upset at talk, and we can get more into those with Mr. Halford when we get there. Do you want to do some Rangers chat then?
Yeah, yeah.
So what are you hearing out there about this Rangers team? Because, you know, I follow Arthur Staple, covers the Rangers.
Yeah.
They lose the last game, and he basically said someone's going to walk the plank next. Like, it's not just Trouba, and then they keep losing and carry on. What comes next for this Rangers team?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think when you're dealing with an owner like James Dolan, who it's hard to read. He's a hard guy to read. Like, at times he can be a stubborn owner. At times he can be an owner that reacts quickly. How do you know for sure?
With him?
Yeah.
Oh, you don't. And I think you're totally at the mercy of someone with billions of dollars just doing what they want to do when they want to do it. So is the suggestion here that maybe he's decided that's enough and they're good to move on or the opposite?
No, but like if Ranger fans are sitting there going, the issues with Peter Laviolette and he must go, or are they at the point where Peter's not the problem, Chris Drury is the general manager, is not the problem, it's strictly player personnel, and the focus needs to be moving players out, like core players out?
Yeah. Well, did you see
this Kako stuff today?
Do you want me to read the Kako quotes?
But it just seems like nobody knows where he could potentially turn to make a significant change.
It's funny because until you talk to someone like Doug McClain, you don't realize how often some of these decisions aren't made by the general managers or even team presidents. Yeah. It's like the owner being like, not paying him anymore.
Yeah.
Get that guy out of here. And it's like, oh, well, I guess I better make this look like it was my decision.
The latest round of drama was with today with Kakko talking to reporters. And he's like talking about him getting scratched. He said, I was surprised. Yeah. I know you got to do something as a coach when you're losing games, but I think it's just easy to pick on the young guy and boot him out. That's how I feel, to be honest. I haven't been on the ice too much when opponents score a goal. I have not been the worst guy, but that was me out of the lineup. There's been older players who have sat out as well. That's what Laviolette said. The decisions that I make, they're tough decisions. So they went back and forth. But clearly a young player, high pick, who's not enjoying the coaching. And I mean, when you're throwing other players on your team.
I hate that comment. That's
the part to me that sticks out where it's like, that's how desperate you are to like make an impact with your words, is talking about how like there's guys out there that are worse than me.
It strikes me as siblings being like, well, he did this. You gave him that, or, you know, like throwing other people under the bus to get yourself ahead. That's not team.
That's the type of quote that you end up on a different team, mm-hmm. because it's like, how do you go back into the room with all the guys and like, so who do you think?
Tell me which guy. Tell us all which guy you think you're better than.
Yeah. Like, it's just, I find that pretty tough words. I mean, it's not like he's lighting up.
Four goals in 29 games.
Yeah.
He has.
And he's got the audacity to be, to challenge his coach with being scratched.
And,
well, what?
And three shots in his last five games.
On fire.
1 point.
I can see where he's playing judge and jury on who should come out and who doesn't. We've all done that, but we've never done it publicly. Right?
No.
But we've all done it, right, JB?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, so, that's half what you do in the bus with your, in the dressing room, the hotel room with your guys.
But even if they picked him to move out, mm-hmm. what are you getting for him here? He's been in the league for, 6 years now? He was the second overall pick. And his best year is 18 goals. And that was 3 years ago. So
18 goals, 40 points.
What do you think you could get for him? Can you get a first-round pick for him?
I think so, Kip. He's 6'2", 215 or 220.
He's a third-line winger. Now, you tell me, like we had this earlier conversation, you believe that he can be a top-six player?
Yeah,
okay.
I do.
Then you may spend a first round on him.
Yeah.
But
I think I'm going on age there. Like, he's going to turn 24 in February. Has some pedigree. Hasn't been given a ton of opportunity. You're behind Zibanejad, Panarin, Kreider. You know, you're behind Trocheck. You're behind good players. So I think there's an opportunity there for someone to scoop him up if you're the San Jose Sharks or the Blackhawks.
If they can get a first rounder for him,
mm-hmm.
I'd be surprised.
Oh, yeah, you don't think he has that much value?
I agree, Kip. Like,
I'm just not ready to spend a first-rounder. Like, first-rounders, to me, at the trade deadline are impactful today. Guys that can come in mm-hmm. and help you, even if you're renting them for a playoff run.
But see, here's where I would say, you know, I'm going to write an article for tomorrow on how I love what St. Louis has done, and I love what Washington did this past offseason, where both teams are kind of middling to going the wrong way teams. And then they said, we're going to try to win. We're going to get competitive. We're going to say, you know, offer sheets, or we're going to get Matt Roy and Chychrun. I think you look at Kakko, if you're one of these middling teams, and say, maybe a first doesn't help us win the cup this year, but maybe this is a part of what we're building for the future. You might see more teams trying to turn things around. Because look at, the Buffalo Sabres in year 13, who bottomed out, or how long it took Edmonton to turn it around, or Montreal, who's in the pit. Like, it's tough to get out of the pit.
Anaheim.
Get some players.
So if Anaheim wants to spend a first rounder and take a chance on him, that's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you got a contending team that wants to spend a first rounder on him,
agreed, you can do better with that.
And I just watched him be a healthy scratch mm-hmm. like weeks before the trade deadline.
Yeah.
That scares the hell out of me.
I agree. I agree that, you know, if you're a team trying to win the cup this year, he's not the guy you get. But if you could buy low on an asset, are you like a team with a late first wants to make that move?
It is a scary one, though, if you're the Rangers, right? Because I agree with Kip. You're not going to get a first for him. And if somebody you get a second or a third round pick for him or whatever it takes to get him, you trade another, get another player in it. And then he goes somewhere else and it's like, well, and he finds it or he's playing with the right people.
Him, and like, Hedl, and whoever it was were a great line in the playoffs
Lafreniere.
For them. Lafreniere.
The kid line.
The kid line. Yeah. They were really effective as a group. And it's like, what if he goes somewhere and finds that magic?
It's a scary trade.
Yeah.
No question.
Once upon a time, Kakko was seen as a, almost Jaromir Jagr like, with big, strong, can protect the puck, can drive it to the net. Like, this guy was almost a can't-miss type of heavy power forward. Mm-hmm. And if you look at that draft, no one's questioning Jack Hughes as number one, but kind of gets dicey a little bit.
It's a tough draft.
It's
after that is Doc, Byram, Turcotte, Sider, Cousins.
For me, Matt Boldy
at 12, he's the best
would
there.
Look better at number two behind Jack Hughes than all the rest of them. And we got Dylan Cousins in there. Philip Broberg has made a nice comeback as an everyday player, coming off of his yo-yo career in Edmonton.
So easy to go deep into a draft and be like, yeah, how'd they miss this guy? You know, Pinto's at 32.
Yeah.
But
yeah, those would.
Anyways, I don't know where this
I don't know where
this goes.
I'm lost.
But certainly Rangers have opened up the door for a team like the Ottawa Senators. 7-2-1 or something
if
like that.
If you sort the standings by points percentage, the Senators are in playoffs today.
Wow.
Rangers have tripped on their own shoelaces.
Yeah, they are in an absolute dogfight here now.
Yeah.
And it just hasn't looked good. So,
that brought Pittsburgh back into it. The Rangers have brought a lot of teams back.
Do you think that the next thing would be Laviolette, Kip? Or? Because he is one of those quick impact for a year or two kind of guy and then wears out his welcome pretty quickly. Like that's happened with him. Multiple times.
Is this Coach Q's time or what? Quenneville going to come back?
If there's one market that could probably welcome Quenneville and not worry about like the repercussions of his history with Chicago, it probably would be New York.
Because otherwise, who else is out there? Gallant was there.
Well, you know, and a lot of people said Gallant was just, they needed more structure and... Mm-hmm. Glantz not the guy anymore. Laviolette comes in, and now Laviolette kind of looks like what Gerard went through with some
it's
of these guys.
Maybe it's personnel.
Hopefully they get a taxi for Laviolette.
Laviolette gave one of the best interviews we've had on this show a couple years ago.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
Game time, boys?
Do
All
it.
Right, Sammy.
All right. Where's my sheet here?
Where are we on that MVP?
I'm going to check for you. It's game time, presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. As a 19+, Ontario only. Please play responsibly. So, just checking here. Just quickly, a couple of games that are on tonight. Two games that are on Sportsnet. The Penguins are home for the LA Kings. And like you said, Borny, Penguins not totally out of it all of a sudden because of what the Rangers have looked like. They're plus 120 on home ice. The Kings are coming in. Kings are having a good year. They're minus 140. Mm-hmm.
I missed the Kings too. I screwed up on the Kings.
Did you?
Yeah, early in the season, I didn't like them at all.
Yeah, me either. I'm not sure why they're so good. They're without Drew Doughty.
And I will say, you know me, how much I care about jerseys. The Kings road white versus the Penguins home blacks.
Great matchup.
It's a really, really good jersey matchup. And the other game that's on Sportsnet 1 tonight, Boston Bruins in Calgary to take on the Flames. Flames are plus 115, and the Boston Bruins are minus 135. And if you guys could just talk amongst yourselves, so I pull up the MVP odds here.
Bruins kind of finding it here, Kip. They, what do we got here? Last 10. Well, last 10 is only 6-4, but feels like they're kind of creeping back in. They're 5 points behind division lead, which, you know, we thought they were dead to rights for a while.
Yeah. For me, it's still about center ice position and between Zacha and Lindholm, good players, but not front line kind of leaders for them. Do they go out and try to find something else, switch it up a little bit here? I do believe that they'll quietly be really active, I think, to try to fix the level of inconsistency.
They're definitely flawed. That's one of them. You know, Swayman was supposed to save their bacon a lot, and he's been better, but not.
And the Hart Trophy favorite still is Kirill Kaprizov at plus 120. Connor McDavid there at plus 300. Nathan MacKinnon plus 650. Kucherov plus 700. And if our you want to get a good number on Leon Draisaitl, who's having a phenomenal year.
850.
25 to 1 right now. Plus 2,500. Yep.
Oh,
so,
my.
So, I mean,
I'm not
that,
allowed to bet on that because I vote.
But. I don't. I mean, that to me is a really nice number.
So what happens if you go on your phone and you bet on it?
He's going to be Shane Pinto.
Yeah, I'd lose my membership in the Professional Hockey Writers Association.
Oh, okay. Is that all?
In the end, I go to jail.
That would be devastating.
Anyways,
we'd visit you.
Would you?
A cake. I'd bake you a cake with a file.
I couldn't handle it.
Anyways, that was Game Time presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus. Ontario only. Please play responsibly.
It probably is illegal, actually.
I would imagine.
Probably quite illegal.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to find out what the repercussions of that are.
No. That would bring shame to our show.
And I wouldn't do that to us.
No. Only the, you know, producer, first
Sam
day
does
back.
That.
Stiffed by my cast at 5 o'clock. Okay, good job. Hey, you guys are so professional. I really appreciate it.
We've got lots to talk about. There's still lots to go.
Yep.
Still lots to go. Mike Halford, co-host of Halford and Brough, will join us. We'll get into Vancouver and, you know, I mean, shouldn't things be settling down now? Big win.
Things never settle down in Vancouver. We are blessed to have that market because it's like Toronto temperature all the time.
It really did feel there's some maybe ask Halford about this, but the press conference last night was apparently pretty weird with Tockett and Short and just naming guys.
I watched it. He said, I'm not going to talk a lot tonight.
Prepared statement almost. So interesting times there.
I saw people say, what does he have, notes? He had his game card.
Like, and Pettersson and Miller on separate power play units. Everybody's getting all fired up about it. It's the temperature is warm in Vancouver.
All right, we'll get into that. Plus Kiefer Sherwood. What a night.
11 goals.
Oh my God.
What a night. First hat trick. Plenty of Vancouver Canucks coming up next after the break. You don't want to miss it.
Dive deep into Toronto sports and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As a reminder, this hour of Real Kipper and Bourne brought to you by Bet365. Nick Kiprios, Justin Bourne. In a few minutes or sooner, Mike Halford will join us and we'll talk Vancouver Canucks. All right. Ask for him and you will get him.
Yeah.
Mike, how are you, man? Thanks for joining us.
Good, boys. How are you?
We're good. We're good. Everything all hunky-dory now with Kiefer, big hat trick and a solid win. An emotional, everybody seemed emotional last night. Where does it sit with you?
Good. All you need is one win, and you forget the debacle on Saturday against Boston. So it's been a roller coaster, man. It has been. It's been crazy. Like, there's been so many really, really bad performances on home ice this year. Like, I think I tweeted it out last night. In two of the last three games, they had pretty comprehensive wins against two of the last three Stanley Cup champions. Like, it beat Florida, they beat Colorado. Emphatically, it was great. And this is the same team at home this year that's lost, like, 7-3 to Edmonton, 6-0 to New Jersey, 5-1 to Boston on the weekend. So it's been the emotions have been up, down, but at least for today, and thanks in part to Kiefer Sherwood, yeah, they were up.
So, Mike, one thing I'd like to have people do from their local market is set the stage a little bit. Where are things at in Vancouver right now? What are the major hot-button issues that have the fan base talking?
Oh, man, how much time do you have? Yeah. Okay. Well, let's do it chronologically, right?
Okay.
So prior to the start of the season, you have the news that Dakota Joshua was undergoing treatment for testicular cancer and he was going to miss the start of the season. That also coincided with the news that Thatcher Demko had a popliteus injury in his knee and that was going to sideline him to start the season. Got all the excitement about all the new free agents that they brought in, you know, Sherwood and Heinen. and DeBrusk, and then the season starts, and they quickly realize that Artur Sylots can't play in net, but no worries, because Kevin Lankinen's here, and he can hold down the fort, so that's good. Then Brock Besser suffers a concussion on a hit from Tanner Jeannot, so he's out for a little while. Then JT Miller takes a 10-game leave of absence. Personal reasons, no explanation given, no reason why. We don't find out, and we never will, because he's not going to talk about it again. In the midst of all of this, Elias Pettersson is going through a major struggle to start the season, kind of rights the ship a little bit, then kind of goes back into a funk and is now kind of going along at roughly a point-a-game pace yet, a point-a-game pace, and then it's still kind of facing some scrutiny from certain local radio hosts in the morning. Anyway, so it's a lot, right? Like, it's a lot. It's been Ross actually said it really well. He said, it feels like there's a lot of tiny little fires burning everywhere, and they're doing their best to stamp them all out. And despite all this, they're still in the first wild card spot in the West, and I think they're 15-9-4. So record wise, it's been okay, but there's been a lot to unpack with 30 games, Borny. Let me tell you,
that was great.
Okay.
Thanks,
if we step off the ice for a second here, Rick Tocchet and the Vancouver media, I sense a bit of a it's too much for me to say a love-hate relationship, but a love, be very careful what I say, relationship.
He's like, he knows the game, the media game. I mean, he obviously knows hockey, but he did media. He worked at TNT for years, so he knows what's going to get a sound bite. And it's this like delicate dance every time where he knows what the questions are really about. Mm-hmm. And he does his best to not give anybody a sound bite, because the one time that he kind of did last year, and it was about Pettersson, is he realized that it was just more of a headache than anything else and doesn't prove anything. He's 100% not a guy that will call out anybody in the media. Doesn't like doing it with players. He won't. I mean, you hear him talk, he will never call out an official in post-game media. He'll never do it. He always standard answers, right? He's like, we got the best refs in the world. It's a real tough job. That's it. So he's very keen and savvy. I think the thing is, like, he's got his frustrations with how the team has played this year too, and he is balancing that line between being candid and honest and open, and then knowing that can of worms that would be open if he did that. So it's just kind of terse, and it's like complimentary when you know he doesn't really want to be complimentary. And he did kind of go off on the weekend, which was good, but without naming individual players, right? We're all left to guess who the passengers were that he was talking about after that game against Boston.
So, you know, hearing the run through and watching from afar, the two stories that I think stand out are, you know, you guys have your own Nylander and Pettersson, where it's like, good player, paid a lot. People talk about him. Some love him, can't. Some people, you know, don't. And then the Miller thing. The Miller thing is obviously at the top of the list, and these two things may be related. Is it, you know, are we tired of talking about the relationship between these two guys? Does it actually have any effect, tangible effect on the ice?
I mean, look, I think it's fairly well established without anyone actually ever saying it out loud that they're not best friends.
Right.
No one's ever said it out loud. It's just you got all these sort of inferences and anecdotal evidence and rumblings and whisperings that they're not compatible. Now, on a surface level, it's like not a huge deal. We've all played a sport at a variety of levels. You've had a teammate and you're like, I don't jive with that guy. He's not my kind of guy. I don't like him that much. And it's fine because you can move forward and get along and be teammates and everything. Where it gets weird is that both guys have gone through these huge swings this season, those two in particular. Pettersson was invisible for stretches at the start of the year, and this is, you know, still fresh off. He hasn't even kicked in that contract extension yet. And then Miller taking a 10-game leave of absence only for, you know, classified as personal reasons with no explanation, nothing from the club, no statement, nothing from his coach, nothing from the general manager, nothing from the president of hockey ops. You're just kind of left staring at it and saying, what are we missing here? Because it seems like there's a lot going on without anybody knowing. And I mean, the sad part is, like, we do this, Bruff and I do this for a living. We have no idea what's really going on behind the scenes. And the amount of people that come up and ask me about it, they're all left disappointed when I kind of shrug. I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, I've got very little on this one. It's a weird dynamic. That's the best way I can describe it.
Yeah.
You're listening and watching Mike Holford, or just listening as we don't have him on Zoom, Monday through Fridays on Sportsnet 650. Mike, in terms of, okay, just the isolated look at maybe the relationship between Miller and Pettersson, but is there a sense at all that it's bleeding past the two of them, that they're, it could affect the chemistry in the room, or are we not there?
If you're willing to point to these gigantic clunkers that they have where there's no passion and no emotion and the team looks like it's completely uninterested in playing, maybe. But then they have the ability to flip the switch seemingly on a night-to-night basis to where their attention to detail and preparation and carrying out the coach's game plan to a T execution-wise is spot on. So I think that there's definitely something off, especially in when juxtaposed with last year. Because last year was great. It was everyone's 100% healthy. Everyone's buying into Tocchet's system. They're playing it perfectly. Vibes are immaculate. They're winning tons of games, right? It was the third most successful season in Canucks history. 50-plus wins, 100-plus points. I think everyone looks at that and is like, well, how come it's not like that anymore? Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's the easiest thing to point to, that nebulous, well, something stinks in the room. But I just don't, again, like, I just don't know if there's anything tangible aside from a bunch of people whispering about it.
And, I mean, there's been injury issues kind of throughout the lineup right now on defense. We know that's a significant sore spot. And it sounds like, well, you know Jim Rutherford. He's not one to sit by passively when there's an active need for the team. How was the reaction in town? And what are your thoughts about, you know, old Fried threw a little bit of a nuke in the water with a Pettersson for Cousins and Byram thing?
Right, yeah. Like, I mean, we talked about that a lot on Monday. We're like, manna from heaven. Way to go, Freeze. Like, it's going to do this for 3 hours today. Okay, look, honestly speaking, if you wanted to point to the one most obvious, glaring, like, keep it simple, stupid reason why the team hasn't played as well as last year, it's because of the blue line. Like, yeah. It's not good. I mean, there's probably three guys that are floating in and out of that lineup with regularity. Desharnais, Juleson, and Friedman, who's been sent back down to the minors now, that probably aren't legit NHL defensemen. Mm-hmm. I know Desharnais played all last year, but he's really struggled. Juleson's kind of like an AHL, NHL tweener, and so is Friedman. And they're playing constantly, right? And then when Hronek went down, you basically had a top-flight number one defenseman in Hughes, then two guys that would be better suited on a third pair in Soucy and Myers, and then a bunch of other guys that are kind of fringe NHLers. Like, you can't win with that on a regular basis. So when Rutherford said, like, we're probably a couple players away from being a contender, I think he might have been talking specifically about the blue line.
Right.
Because, he's built blue lines before. I remember we were covering him when he was in Pittsburgh and Letang went down, and he went out and made a couple moves. I think he picked up Ron Hainsey and Trevor Daley and rebuilt a blue line. Like, he knows how to do it, and he knows what a good one looks like. And right now, the Canucks are doing a decent job patchwork and trying to fit guys into spots and everything. But long term, if it got down to a playoff series where they were playing a really good opponent and needed to beat them 4 out of 7 times, they'd have a hard time doing it with the blue line they got right now.
Got to ask you about Kiefer Sherwood. What a horrible time to have a great season with another year on your deal at $1.5 million. But as far as the Vancouver Canucks, since I can remember them, there's always this one guy who's on that wing, either Trent Klatt or Anson Carter, and now it's Kiefer Sherwood, who's just finding ways to light up, man. It's he's been fun to watch, but last night was real special watching him have his first hat trick.
Yeah, so they said, Patrick Alvin said in the offseason, after they re-signed Dakota Joshua, it was like, the goal for us now is to find the next Dakota Joshua. And, like, full marks to them as an executive because they did it with Sherwood. I mean, that's got to be, I don't know, one of the 5 best free agent signings maybe in the league for dollars to production.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's right there, right? And it's funny because one of the reasons they signed him was that after that first-round playoff series against Nashville, Quinn Hughes told Alvin, he's like, get a guy like that, mm-hmm. because he was such a pain in the butt to play against in that opening round. And I don't think – no one had any thought that he'd have this kind of offensive upside, but if you look at his numbers in the American League, they were really good. He was like a 30-plus goal scorer a couple of times, and Tocchet has this anecdote he always tells that when he first talked to Sherwood after signing him, Sherwood was telling him, like, it was a Sunday morning, he was just going to shoot pucks. Like, he's like, I got some spare time. I just want to shoot. I've got that. You know, I think it was kind of his nod to talking to be like, I've got this offensive game in my arsenal, but no one expected this, right? Like, their three leading goal scorers right now are DeBrusk, who was a free agent signing, Sherwood, who was a free agent signing, and Pugh Suter, who was a free, like, an August signing last year. So, I mean, if you want to look at it from that perspective, like, amazing job by the management group for finding these guys and getting the production out of them. But Sherwood has defied everybody's expectations. He's awesome. Like, I love the guy. It's been a wicked signing.
It's funny. Yeah, you're right. They did a great job. I actually wanted to hear more on Pugh Suter. He has 11 goals this season. When we did some of the AWS, like, underlying data sort of stuff, he shakes out really well. He creates, like, these, the, you know, kind of high danger shots, you know, off passes. He's got a good shot. He seems like a really effective ad for them. So you guys have some elite talent there, but it's easy to see how this can be a complete team with guys like Suter.
Yeah, Suter's also super versatile. They played him everywhere. Like, he was on a wing with Miller and Besser. He's played, like, 2C in a pinch. He's probably best served as a 3C, but because he can bounce out wide, they just kind of throw him wherever they need someone. It's like the rug that ties the room together. He's like that's what he does. He just makes lines better because he makes savvy plays and he's pretty cerebral. And I never really understood why, because he was, like I said, he was the guy they signed in like August.
Yeah,
he just kind of hung around free agency, and after a couple of good years with Detroit, and I think it was Chicago, if I'm not mistaken, and it was very odd that he was just sitting there because the Canucks picked him up. They didn't pay him an awful lot, and he slipped in and just did all the things that everybody wants him to. You know, his offense dried up in the second half of the year last year and in the playoffs big time, so there is that. Like, I don't know how sustainable it is because he's not a burner and he's not super physical, but for what they're paying him and what he's given them since he's come on board, it's like it's maybe not necessarily a home run, but like a stand-up triple, no slide, no dirt on the pants kind of thing.
Mike, one more for me, and that's Thatcher Demko coming within what a minute of a shutout, and is that enough for Vancouver Canuck fans to exhale and go, yeah, everything's good again?
Okay, he's really good last night, like
really good,
very solid last night. The exhale part is still not there because I don't know. I think I reflect the sentiments of the fans. Everyone, every time he makes a save, everyone just kind of does that and then waits to see if he's hurt. Because the injury is, I mean, we've spent so much time talking about, like, the popliteus is a very strange injury. There's not a lot of research on it. There's not a lot of rehab procedures in hockey that they were able to kind of blueprint from. So it becomes one of these things where you're like, is it going to happen again? Is he going to aggravate it one day? Is it something that he can kind of play through or play with? And he had a save in the third period last night where he fell down before he made the save. And it took him forever to get up, and I was just like, oh, man, this is it, right? This is the one. So, and, you know, he did play two games in a row because Lankanen's out with the flu, and I don't think that was ideal. I think they'd like to go almost rotation, seriously, like one-and-one with him and Lankanen. But as far as performance goes, that was huge last night because the first two games, even he admitted it, it didn't go great. But the third one, it was old Demko, right? Like making big saves, locking it down in the third period. So from that perspective, yeah, everyone had an exhale. But I am still worried about the health factor because the knee thing is super tricky.
And last one for me, Hallford, we'll let you go, pal. Canucks have 37 points. How many would they have without Quinn Hughes this year?
Oh, man. That's a good question.
Like, is he Norris again for you?
For me, yeah. There was actually a time where his play almost, like, it's going to sound stupid, but it almost became like a detriment because they were deferring to him all the time. Like, they would get on the ice, and then it would be like, well, when Quinn doesn't have the puck, we need to get it to him. And then when he does have it, we have to make sure he gets it back right away. And everything was coming from the point. And I think even Tocchet was kind of like, we need to do some other things here. But he makes so much happen, especially when things aren't going great. He is a sort of get it back to him at the blue line, let him break somebody's ankles. He's worked on his shot so much that it's a way more effective tool now than it was when he broke into the NHL. And we saw the two guys for the Norris last night, right? It's him and Makar. I don't know if anyone's in that conversation right now, but for, like, Bruff and I have said, like, never mind the Norris, like, Hughes is a Hart Trophy candidate the way that he's carried this team right now. I honestly, they might be a sub 30-point team. Now that I think, if you said they got 37, they might be if he wasn't playing right now. They might be sub 30 points.
One quick one for me, Mike, and that was on the weekend we saw Jim Rutherford with Scott Oak and Ray Ferraro, and we got a trade Christmas freeze coming up Thursday, if I'm not mistaken, at midnight, and I really got the sense that he'd love to pull the trigger on something.
Oh, you got that too, eh? Okay, good. it's pretty obvious that he wants to get something done. One, his track record. And then two, I go back to how the good vibes were last year. The Zadorov trade really worked out well for them. They didn't pay a ton to get him in the door. He fixed the defense. And he got steadily better and better as they went to the playoffs. And then I still liked the Lindholm trade. I know it's kind of been a bit polarizing in the aftermath because it was a big price for a rental. But I thought in the playoffs, it was where you looked at it and you're like, that was a really good ad. So he's got that. He's always got that inherent trader's mentality that he wants to go and make deals and tinker and put the team over the top. He's identified it. He said it over the weekend with Scott and Ray that he wants to add a couple guys. It's just the market right now is so soft. There's just nothing there. Everyone keeps talking about Marcus Pettersson out of Pittsburgh, but he just went on IR, and I don't know if he's the right fit anyway. But I got a feeling that once that trade freeze gets lifted on the other side of Christmas, I would not be surprised if he starts making moves right away and gets something done in January.
The Vancouver Canucks in Utah Wednesday night, Vegas, and then back home Saturday against the Ottawa Senators. Mike, really appreciate your time giving us a great feel for what's going on out there in Vancouver. Thanks for joining us.
All good. Call anytime, boys. Cheers.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it.
Halford and Brough. They're kind of like us.
The Vancouver us?
Yes. Yeah. They are the Vancouver us, where they sometimes speak before they think. It's the best way I can describe it.
But if you're a listener, you like that, right?
Yeah.
You don't want everything
it's
to be
good for the listener.
Filtered.
It could get us in trouble every once
and
in a while. That's all.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, what are your thoughts on that Canuck team? It's been a tiresome year. Like, I'm exhausted hearing all that. It's like 30 games.
It's a great professional breakdown.
A year in review from.
Yeah.
It just seems like something's percolating.
Agree.
Yeah.
Feels like someone big is going out the door.
Something.
Yeah. Yeah, would you do that, Cousins and Byram for Pettersson?
No, I would not.
No,
I would not.
Agree.
It's just
Cousins has some defensive metrics that are putrid. And like, if I wanted a center like him, a young guy, bigger guy, I would want someone who's tenacious and two way. And you know, I don't know that he's
hated that clip of him leaving early too, even off the ice there at the end of the game.
Yeah.
He just had it with the referee.
Yeah. Well, I think he may have actually got
the official
kicked out.
Yeah, maybe.
Oh no, it was a 10-minute misconduct.
Yeah, he got a misconduct. Yeah. But it was a bit of a hissy fit for pretty standard drop.
Yeah.
Well, we focused a lot today's show on the New York Rangers, but Buffalo's room and where they kind of sit moving forward here, it's going to be real interesting to see.
Yeah, Pegula has let them know it's in there to solve. So tonight they got the Montreal Canadiens. A great time to have a team meeting, though, because you – in theory, have a good chance to win hockey game the next night, and you can go, hey, ever since I went in there, the boys rallied.
When Derek Brandeo plays that music, does everybody hear it?
Is that
my cue to shut up?
I think what happened is it was potted up and it played or something. I don't know. But it just scared me.
You spook easy like a horse.
Yeah, I do. I need my blinders. But so I go to NHL.com and I look at the standings of the Buffalo Sabres, who are 0-7-3 in their last 10 games.
Mm-hmm.
And it says in the win streak column that they've lost 3 in a row.
Yeah.
That's incorrect.
Well, they haven't won. They've lost in a shootout or overtime
But they lost. They've lost 10 games in a row.
Yeah.
They've accumulated 3 loser points. Congratulations. Yep. Mm-hmm. But they have lost 10 times in a row.
I hate that.
Me?
No.
Or what I say?
No. The standings.
Yeah, it's stupid.
It's like, you know, regulation wins, like overtime losses don't count.
3 points.
I don't know.
Give us just 3 points.
Ridiculous.
Yeah. Agreed.
They've lost 10 in a row. They stink.
All right. Fun show today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dr. Jason Smith in the first hour and Mike Halford in the second hour. We'll track down Otsi.
Yeah.
We'll find him.
Yeah.
Maybe later on in the week.
Yep.
Always great to have him on the show. All right. Enjoy your games tonight. We're back tomorrow on The Real Kipper and Bourne Show.